wind rose around Venli, pulling debris towards that hole in the sky and the brilliant, terrible light beyond. Boards shredded to splinters, bricks floated past her head. She growled, the rhythm of resolve thumping inside her as she grabbed and clung to parts of the floor that hadn't yet separated. That burning. She knew it well, the terrible pain of Odium's heat scalding her skin, scorching her until her very bones, somehow still able to feel, became ash. It happened every time he gave her orders. What worse thing would he do if he found her fraternizing with the enemy?
Heroes of presents The Storm Pod, a Stormlight Archive podcast. Book 3, Oathbringer.
This is just a quick spoiler warning for chapters 109 and 110. These are really good ones. We've got only really a few episodes here. I think it's 2 episodes left till the end of this part, so we're moving along. Please make sure that you've picked the right episode and that you've done the reading if you need to. We don't want you to be spoiled, but we do want you to enjoy the episode. Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Sean Q, and as the world crumbles around him, his bondsmith abilities are keeping his shit tight as fuck. It's Jack! What's up, baby?
Man, wasn't that epic?
It was so fucking cool, dude.
So cool. So, like, it was off the chart Jedi kind of stuff.
Like,
I found. Like, him standing there keeping that... keeping the world just in the immediate around him together.
Yeah, it's when she sees him. It's when Venli sees it and she's just like, holy shit.
It was really cool.
Because he hadn't told her about Radiance until she saw him do it.
Right.
And she's like, holy moly.
I think that was literally what Sanderson originally wrote.
Venli whispers, holy moly.
Venli whispers in her mind the loudest holy moly.
Like that there's all ever. Caps.
All caps. Caps moly.
Okay. Before we get into this episode here, we do have something you and I have to talk about a little bit before we cover chapter 109. You have this thing in your mind. And it came out during our role-playing session this week. Oh, by the way, amazing. We fought a fucking dragon turtle. It was amazing. You are concerned. You're still concerned about, one, Oathbringer's, like, location.
Yeah.
And you're also worried about the meaning of Oathbringer in this book. Like, what?
The lack of the presence of Oathbringer altogether.
Right.
Like this entire book that we've been covering for 8 years now is titled Oathbringer, and where in the heck and beckon is Oathbringer? It's nowhere.
Okay.
What happened to me prior to our D&D game is I was thinking about this whole idea, and then I was thinking about how Adolin has just confessed to Shallan what he did with Sadeus.
Right.
And so I'm thinking, okay, so maybe that is getting revealed towards the end of the book in confidence to a friend, to a close friend.
Yeah.
And the reason for it is he's going to pay a price for this.
Right.
And what is that price? And I thought, that's where Oathbringer comes in. Oathbringer is somehow going to be the tool or instrument used in Adolin's, you know, price. And then I thought, oh my God, is he gonna be executed? Like, what does that look like? How would that come about?
Yeah, and then I think you texted me.
Would there
me
be
you're
evidence
like...
of the crime? And I'm like, well, no one was there. Like, so then I'm reeling through all this, and then the most horrible thing that I could imagine is that all of this comes to light that Adolin did this. Mm-hmm. Okay, and it comes to light amongst the other high princes and the other nations. Or I think it mostly applies to high princes of Alethkar. And then what you have is a case where, you know, maybe Dalinar Colin is asked to administer punishment.
Right. So here, let me
something like that.
Let me read to the listeners here what the a series of texts that I got. Jack usually texts me once.
You're going to read my text, bro?
Yeah, or... twice, meaning like he'll send me a thought and then another thought and then I'll respond and then he'll respond. Normally, Jack is not the type of texter where, you know, I do sometimes where I'm just like stream of consciousness, like message after message after message. You got to read like seven of my messages to get my full grasp of what I'm talking about. But this is from Jack the other day. OMG. Separate message. Does Dalinar kill his son with Oathbringer? Separate message. Is he forced to execute his son for what he did to Sadeas? Separate message. These are just some thoughts I had while talking. Oh, no. While taking a pee.
No. I distinctly remember typing pee-pee.
Yeah. Oh, you.
Like two peas. Well, I was taking. I never say I'm just taking
a
pee. I say I'm taking a pee-pee. Because I like the double P.
Yeah,
I
honestly changed it to P because I was embarrassed to read what you actually wrote. But then you just called
me
out.
I'm not embarrassed.
So, no, I was embarrassed for you. And then, okay, so these are just some thoughts I had while taking a PP just now. And then he's like, is Oathbringer still bound to Dalinar? I can't remember. And then he's like, am I way off? I'm freaking out.
I am freaking. I was freaking. Yeah, and you didn't really help me through that night. You didn't really give me much.
I sent you one very concise and appropriate message, and I wrote,
right.
Oathbringer is in the hands of Ile Sadeas or the Sadeas clan. Dalinar is no longer bound to that sword.
Right, he's no longer bound to, but that doesn't mean that they might try to get him to administer the punishment for this crime.
Hand Oathbringer here, you must kill your son with the Oathbringer?
Yeah. That's what I thought was the worst scenario. But then this morning, as I was telling you all about this...
Yeah, you were we're talking about it.
And then I was saying how much I've been wrestling with this as the denouement of this book. And then I was thinking... Okay, well, if Adolin is a sacrifice in this book, which I think it would be awful to read, and I really hope it doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was saying to you, it feels a little too Game of Thrones to me.
Yeah.
And for this material that Sanderson has built so far, I would say that might go a little too far. Doesn't mean it won't happen.
Mm-hmm.
I just think it's a little too far, personally. That's what I would say. And then I was saying to you...
Literally,
be even...
seconds before we started recording, you were like...
Yeah. And then I was like, well, wouldn't it be even better if in the moment... Let's say, yep, okay, ELA finds out somehow,
mm-hmm.
maybe has a spy. That's something I just had right now. What if ELA has a spy amongst... the heroes.
Yeah.
Like amongst
the Bridge Four or something.
Well, amongst the heroes in Shadesmar.
Right.
So
like Kaladin.
That I haven't thought about like Kaladin's a spy for Ely?
Or like Shallan or whatever.
Well, I don't really think it would be one of them.
Like maybe Patton? Sorry, I'm just pushing this.
You're making
thing a
fun
far.
Of me because it's
I am
conspiratorial.
A little bit.
Okay. Yeah. Sorry, I wasn't picking up on that.
Sorry.
I get it. Yeah. Okay.
But what you said was, wouldn't it be cool? Wouldn't it be cooler if they were like, you have to kill your son, and then this is what triggers the return of the Blackthorn,
right? And then Oathbringer is like, no, I'm reclaiming my sword and I'm going to use it on you and anyone else that gets in between me and my son on this. Like, basically, it's Dalinar saying, I stand by my son doing this.
Right.
That actually gives me goosebumps.
Yeah, and then that. And then there's a moment where he says that, and then Teft's about to do Fire Moss, and he's like, you know what? I'm quitting Fire Moss. And he throws the Fire Moss down, and then Lopin rubs his arm that is like the newly grown arm, and he's like, yeah. And then Sigzil's like writing notes in his book, and he's like, closes his book. Sorry. I'm trying to describe what all the other characters would be doing in this moment, and I'm literally just saying things about those characters that I know, like the arm thing and the fire moss thing and the book thing.
Sorry. So yeah, that's why I'm nervous.
I love it,
about
dude. I love it so much. The one slip up though in our conversation before we started recording was that I said you were like, there has to be a price paid, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. Didn't we have a chapter that we read this part in part four called The Cost? And then my foible was that I looked for it and then said out loud, actually, that's the first chapter of part five. And you were like, what?
Yeah, you told me a spoiler. And see, there you go. It's titled The Cost. That's what this is. This is where we're going.
Yeah.
We are going to the cost of Adolin's action. We've been waiting for it the whole book. That's what Oathbringer's about. I don't know the details, but where we're headed.
Could the cost just be like someone's bill at like a restaurant?
No.
Like, that's not simple like that?
Well, okay. If that's what happens at the end of it, and it's just like
that's Oathbringer,
the price of Shallan and Adolin, they're out on a date,
having to settle
and
the
bill
check
comes.
And then they argue
about who's going to pay for it.
Okay, we're off the rails now. We're off the rails.
Yeah.
Okay, let's bring it back in.
Okay. Whoa.
All right. So.
But that's what I've been thinking lately, folks.
Yes.
And it's not been fun to think of these things.
I would say the opposite for everyone listening. I think this has been very fun for us.
It's been very, yeah, fun for you.
Very fun, yeah.
We are covering chapter 109 as we inch ever so close to part five here.
Yeah.
Or is there an interlude in between? There must be.
There is interludes, yeah.
Okay.
The good one, too.
109, Neshua Kadal. We begin with Ray Shafir, the Midnight Mother, is another unmade who appears to have been destroyed at Aharyatium. So according to Hesse,
right,
Ray Shafir, the Midnight Mother, is an unmade who appears to have been destroyed. How much do we know about Aharyatium?
That is the like the false desolation.
Right?
That's the it's the most recent one. They thought that this was going to be the one to like the last one. This isn't the second time that we've had Hesse say that one of the unmade has died, and that's why they're not around anymore. Okay, I think she said it. I'm trying to find the actual quote. I think she said it about Ba'edo Mishrim.
Okay,
that Ba'edo Mishrim had died and was like kind of lost or whatever. Mm. The important part of this little spot here is that we know the Midnight Mother is not dead. So Hesse doesn't have all the information.
Right.
So just this could call into question everything that Hesse's been teaching us about the Unmade. Not probably everything, but some of the things she has said may not be accurate. Right?
Right.
And I love that. I love that Sanderson does that, because now we were like, we think we know a little bit more about the Unmade. And yes, we do, but there could be something. So, like, maybe if she thinks Ray Shafir was dead and isn't, maybe Ba'edo Mishrim isn't dead. Or maybe another one that she said wasn't dead is dead or whatever. You know what I mean? So, yeah, it's really interesting.
Well, that's interesting. Dalinar, so this chapter 109, Neshwa Kadal, mm-hmm. begins with Dalinar running his fingers along a line of red crystal embedded on a stone wall. The little vein started at the ceiling and wound all the way down the wall. Within the pattern of the green, of the light green and gray strata to right to the floor, it was smooth to the touch, distinct in texture from the rock around it. Mm-hmm. He rubbed his thumb across the crystal. It's like the other strata lines ripple out from this one, getting wider as they move away from it. What does it mean? He asks Navani. The two of them stood in a storage room near the top of the tower. I don't know, she says, but we're finding more and more of them. What do you know of essential theology? She asks him. It's a thing for the Ardents and scribes, he says, and soulcasters. She says, that is a garnet. A garnet, let's see. Emeralds for grain. That was the most important. And heliodores for flesh. They raised animals for their gem hearts to provide those two. He was pretty sure diamonds made quartz and storms. He didn't know much about the others. Topaz made stone. They'd needed those for the bunkers on the Shattered Plains. Mm-hmm. So what do you make of all that?
This is talking a little bit about soulcasters.
Yeah.
And what stones and what they can do. Yeah.
Right.
Interesting, right?
Pretty neat. Garnets made blood, Navani says, but we don't have any soulcasters that use them.
See, there you go. Blood. Just because they have the stone doesn't necessarily mean they have the person who can use that.
Right.
Interesting.
Blood? Dalinar asks. That sounds useless. Well, scientifically, we think soulcasters were able to use garnets to make any liquid that was soluble in water, as opposed to oil-based. What, your eyes are crossing. Sorry, he felt at the crystals. Then it's another mystery. When will we find answers? The records below, Navani said, speak of this tower like a living thing, with a heart of emerald and ruby, and now these veins of garnet.
Cool, right?
It's kind of creepy to think that this tower could be a living thing.
Right. Well, he was literally just touching these veins in the wall, and now she said garnets make blood, and now they're describing them as like actual veins in a creature. It's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I don't know. Is this going to be also a part of the big part five? Is like a reveal of what this tower actually is?
I don't know. They haven't really talked about it a lot, so it would be kind of a... You know,
that would be fascinating if there was some kind of creature inside or something like that, locked in stone. He stood up, looking around the darkened room which held the monarch's chairs between meetings. It was lit by a sphere that he'd set on a stone ledge by the door. If this tower was alive, Dalinar says, then it's dead now. Or it's just sleeping. But if that's the case, I have no idea how to wake it. Navani says. We've tried infusing the heart like a Fabrial. I've even had Renarin try to push Stormlight into it, and nothing's worked. Mm-hmm. So...
So they just can't quite figure it out.
If it is alive, it's not something that is being infused by Stormlight. Mm-hmm. Or infusing the heart like a Fabrial.
Right.
Dalinar picks up a chair and then pushes the door open. He held the door with his foot, shooing away a guard who tried to do it for him, while Navani collected the sphere and joined him in the conference room, in front of the glass wall looking toward the origin. He set down the chair and checked his forearm clock. Is this just a watch?
It is, but it's also a pain reel too, remember?
It's a pain reel, right?
Yeah.
Stupid thing, he says. He was growing far too dependent on it. Kind of like us and our phones.
Yeah.
The arm device had a pain reel in it too, a kind of fabrial with a spren that feasted upon pain. He'd never yet remembered to use the thing. It's kind of funny. I wonder if he'd never remember to use it or if he just wants to feel the pain.
Maybe. Yep.
12 minutes left, assuming Elphabar's calculations were correct. With span reads confirming the storm's arrival hours before in the east, the calculations were down to judging the speed of the storm. A runner arrived at the door. Creer, the duty sergeant for guards, accepted it. He was a bridgeman from Bridge 20, was it? Okay, I stopped there and I thought, wow. Because every time they mention a bridge, I'm thinking of them now in terms of the effect of Bridge 4 and what that has had amongst them.
Right.
So I just kind of, I love thinking of it now as like an ever-growing thing that's like affecting the men, affecting their morale, mm-hmm. the way they look at life, the yeah. way they look at each other.
It's interesting to think about all these other men that were saved, right? Because like we tend to only really focus on Bridge 4.
Right.
But there are all these men who were saved that day, and then we're all trained by like Teft and the men by Bridge 4 and Kaladin's ideals and all this stuff, that there are is a huge army of men who are all kind of in the image of what Kaladin started in the Shattered Plains in the first book.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
It is really cool.
It opens itself up definitely for RPGing, because you could just be another squad. You know, you could have had
sure,
your own
100%.
Other bridge origin story. You know what I mean? Like maybe you were Bridge 10 and Bridge 10 also had to go through some struggles. And, you know, you could have a secret Radiant on there that maybe is, you know, it's really cool. It leaves itself open for all these other stories.
Bridge 20. Yeah, that's what sort of got me there. He and his brother were both guards, though Creer wore spectacles, unlike his twin. I like how they just drop in like a little detail yeah. about an obscure little character.
Yeah.
Message from Brightness Call, sir, Creer says, handing over the note to Navani. It looked like it had come from a span read. It had marks on the sides from the clips that had held it to the board, and the tight letters covered only the center of the page. It's from Fenn. Navani says, a merchant ship has vanished in the southern depths this morning, just off of Marat. They went ashore at what they hoped was a safe distance to use the span read and reported a large number of ships at dock along the coast. Glowing figures rose from the nearby city and descended upon them, and the communication cut off. Confirmation, Dalinar says, that the enemy is building a navy.
Mm-hmm.
If that fleet launched from Arat before his own ships were ready, or if the winds were wrong when the Armada did launch. Dalinar says, have to shav right back to the Thalans and suggest to Queen Fenn and our other allies that we hold the next meeting in Thalan City. We'll want to inspect fortifications and shore up the ground defenses.
Really cool.
So again, this is another little tidbit of information that further encourages a meeting in Thalan City.
Yeah, exactly. And it kind of what's the word I'm trying to think of? It reaffirms Dalinar's
right.
guess from last time
that right, it does.
What he thought was going to happen seems to be coming true.
Right. He sent the guards to wait outside and then approached the window and checked his wrist clock. Just a few minutes left, he thought he could see the storm wall below, but it was difficult to be sure from this height. He wasn't accustomed to looking down on a high storm.
Mm-hmm.
Are you sure that you want to do this? Navani asks. The Stormfather asked me something similar this morning. I asked him if he knew the first rule of warfare. Is that the one about terrain or the one about attacking where the enemy's weak? He could pick it out now, a dark ripple surging through the sky below. It's neither, Dalinar said. Ah, right, Navani says. I should have guessed. She was nervous, with good cause. It was the first time that he'd stepped back into the visions since meeting Odium.
Right.
But Dalinar felt blind in this war. He didn't know what the enemy wanted, or how they intended to exploit their conquests. The first rule of war know your enemy.
Know your enemy, right? Sorry.
Oh my God, I can't believe you brought that. That's cool, dude.
Sorry, man. I'm born in 1977. It's my age at the time of the song's
know
release.
Know your enemy. He raised his chin as the storm slammed into Urithiru, roughly at the height of its third tier, and all went white.
Mm-hmm.
Then Dalinar appeared in an ancient palace, in the large open room with sandstone pillars and a balcony that looked out on an antiquated version of Kolinar. Noadon strode through the center of the pillared chamber. This was the youthful Noadon, not the elderly version from his recent dream.
Mm-hmm.
Dalinar had taken the place of a guardsman near the doors. A slender Parshendi woman appeared beside the king in the spot Dalinar had occupied so long ago. Her skin was marbled red and white in a complex pattern, and she had long orange-red hair. She looked down with red eyes, surprised by her sudden appearance, and the robes she wore, those of an advisor to the king. Noadon began speaking to her as if she were his friend, Karm. "I don't know what to do, old friend." "Odium sees that a vision has begun," the Stormfather warned Dalinar. "The enemy is focusing on us. He comes." I like this, that going into the visions now is risky.
Yeah.
Odium is onto them,
right,
if you will,
mm-hmm,
in using this as a tool. And Dalinar asks the Stormfather here, can you hold him back?
Yeah.
And I also like that you're bringing in the Stormfather as like an active member of the team kind of thing. Like,
yes, you know what I mean? Yes.
It's really cool.
It's really cool.
Because before, I have to admit that in Way of Kings and Words of Radiance, I would say the Stormfather is kind of nebulous, like an entity, a presence, but certainly not something that kind of where you can say, hey, can you, do you mind taking out the garbage?
Right.
Or do you mind going down to the store and get me a...
Stormfather's taking out the garbage, rumbling. Burr. This isn't my job. I work so hard all day.
Yeah.
You know what it makes me think of? It's a larger version, a much more epic version of what Kaladin used to do with Syl early on, which is like, okay, go hide at that corner and let me know if Gaz is coming.
Right.
So like a scout, and he's like, hey, force of nature, can you go stop another force of nature, a much larger, deadlier force of nature?
Yeah.
It's really cool.
Well, the Stormfather's response to this is, I am but a shadow of a god.
Mm-hmm.
His power vastly outstrips my own. He sounded smaller than Dalinar was accustomed to. Like the quintessential bully, the Stormfather didn't know how to face someone stronger than himself.
Mm-hmm.
Can you hold him back? I need time to talk to her. I will try. Good enough. Unfortunately, it meant that Dalinar didn't have time to let this Parshendi woman experience the vision in full. He strode toward her and Noadon.
Because normally he would let people experience the vision and then he'd reveal it and say, look, this is what these visions are. But yeah, he has to get right to the point here.
Right. So we get our little change here, mm-hmm, and we get to Venli.
Yeah, Venli's POV now, which is awesome.
Venli turned around. Where was she? This wasn't Marat. Had Odium summoned her again?
I love this here.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I love this that we get to know where she is. She's in Marat, right?
Right. No, it's the wrong storm. He doesn't come during high storms. And I think it's interesting that Odium is coming to her more, mm-hmm, like, often.
Yeah.
Right? A young Alethi male in robes was blathering at her, and she ignored him, biting her hand to see if she could feel any pain. And she could. She shook her hand and looked down at the robes she wore. This couldn't be a dream. It was too real. My friend, the Alethi man asked, are you well? I realize that events have taken their toll on us, but footsteps rang loudly on the stone as another Alethi man approached, wearing a crisp blue uniform. White dusted the hair at his temples, and his face wasn't as round as other human faces. His features actually could almost have been those of a listener, even if that nose was wrong and the face bore far more creases than a listener's ever would.
I love this here, too, because he's wearing a crisp blue uniform. He is Dalinar Kholin. He doesn't look like someone else from the visions. He has such power over these visions now. He just looks like himself.
Like himself now.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Wait, she thought, attuning curiosity. Is that? Disturbance on the battlefield, sir, the older man said to her companion. You are needed immediately. What is this? I didn't hear. They didn't say what it was, Your Majesty, only that you are urgently requested. The human king drew his lips to a tight line and then, obviously frustrated, stalked toward the doorway. Come, he said to Venli. The older man grabbed her arm. Don't, he said softly. We need to talk. This is the Alethi warlord.
Mm-hmm.
My name is Dalinar Kholin, the man said. I lead the Alethi, and you're seeing a vision of past events. Only your mind has been transported, not your body. We two are the only real people here. She yanked her arm out of his hand in attuned irritation.
Mm-hmm.
Why have you brought me here? I want to talk. Of course you do. Now that you're losing, now that we've seized your capital, now you want to talk? What of the years spent slaughtering my people on the Shattered Plains? It had been a game to them. Listener spy reports had shown the humans had enjoyed the sport on the Shattered Plains, claiming wealth and listener lives as part of a grand contest. Man, I thought, how are you going to talk to Dalinar? Like, it's, you know, it's kind of funny. The conversation I might put forth, in many ways, I think fails. It's the telling fails. It's the showing.
Right. Right.
Right.
Yeah. The conversation isn't the important part. It's the, when everything starts to crumble
right.
and he's trying to save her, really showing her who he really is.
Right.
She makes a good point, though. Like, how are we going to have a conversation now after all these years of slaughter?
Yeah. And, yeah. After all this.
Yeah.
It's
really good.
And fair enough. I mean, why should there be conversation?
Yeah, that's...
And rationality and, you know.
It's a really good point that you bring up about the showing. It's really cool.
We were willing to talk when you sent your emissary, Dalinar says, the Shardbearer. I'm willing to talk again now. I want to forget old grievances and even those that are personal to me. Venli walked away, still attuned to irritation. How have you brought me to this place? Is this a prison? Is this your work, Odium? She asks inside, testing my loyalty with a false vision of the enemy. She was using the old rhythms. She'd never been able to do that when Odium's attention had been on her. That's interesting. So when... Around in Odium's presence, the old rhythms are suppressed.
Yeah,
she's not able to access them.
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah. I'll send you back soon, Kholin said, catching up to her. Though he was not short for a human, her current form was a good 6 inches taller than he was. Please, just hear me out. I need to know. What would a truce between our people cost? There's that word,
mm-hmm.
the cost.
Yeah.
A truce. She asks to amusement, stopping near the balcony. A truce. I kind of felt here, like in the language, it's like when Tybalt in Romeo and Juliet says peace.
Yeah.
Peace. I hate the word.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just... Peace, no desolation, no war. What would it cost? Dalinar asks. Well, for a start, it would cost your kingdom. He grimaced. His words were dead and... like those of all humans, but he bore his feelings on his face. So much passion and emotion. Is that why the Spren betrayed us for them? Because of passion and emotion?
Mm-hmm.
The Spren were drawn to passion and emotion?
Yeah. Maybe. That's what she's wondering. Why did the Spren abandon us and go to the humans?
Because passion and emotion... as if we bring in our Star Wars.
Right.
You know, not always great.
Not always great.
What is Alethkar to you? He said. I can help you build a new nation on the Shattered Plains. I will give you laborers to raise cities, ardents to teach any skill that you want, wealth as payment in ransom for Kolinar and its people, a formal apology, and whatever you demand.
He's literally willing to give them everything.
Everything.
If we can just stop the war.
Stop the war, yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Of course, he's... Yeah.
Like, he's willing to do it. It's not going to work out that way, but... You know, like...
I demand that we keep Alethkar. His face became a mask of pain. His brow furrowed. Why must you live there? To you, Alethkar is a place of conquer, but it's my homeland. She attuned to reprimand. Don't you understand? The people who live there, the singers, my cousins, are from Alethkar. That is their homeland, too. Mm-hmm. The only difference between them and you is that they were born as slaves and you as their master.
Makes sense. It is their home, too.
It's their home, too.
Yeah.
Perhaps some other accommodation, then. A dividing of the kingdom? A Parshman High Prince, he asks. She attuned to resolve. Your tone implies you know that that would be impossible. There can be no accommodation, human. Send me from this place. We can meet on the battlefield. So she's not having it.
No.
No, he seized her arm again. I don't know what the accommodation will be, but we can find one. Let me prove it to you that I want to negotiate instead of fight.
Okay.
It's so funny how this is like, it just seems like a desperate attempt from Dalinar to not become the instrument of war.
Yeah.
Like, he's like, don't force me to become what I've been trying to change.
This is like that moment when he was in Rathalas trying to negotiate the surrender of the people of Rathalas. And he's like, right. We can do whatever we can come up with any kind of thing as long as we don't have to fight. And this is his desperate saying, like, don't lead me back down this way where I have to become what I was at Rathalas again.
Right.
We can work on something. I love that how it mirrors itself, those moments, this moment with Venli and that moment with Tanalin's son or whatever his name is. Yeah. Really, really cool.
She says, you can start by not assaulting me. I kind of thought it was, and I did pick up on that. It's a little forceful that he grabs her.
Mm-hmm. It is a little
because
bit.
Because he does grab her a few times.
Yeah, he does.
Physically.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not, he doesn't command her attention by asking for it or tapping her on the shoulder. He grabs her arm twice and pulls her. Like, she wasn't certain he could fight him, honestly. Her current body was tall but fragile, and in truth, she'd never been proficient at battle, even during the days when she'd taken an appropriate form. At least let us try a negotiation, he said. Please. He didn't sound very pleading. He had grown stern, a face like a stone, glaring. With the rhythms, you could infuse your tone with the mood you wished to convey, even if your emotions weren't cooperating. Mm-hmm. But humans didn't have that tool. They were as dull as the dullest slave. This is interesting. So he appears, that's the one thing I find confusing about that paragraph, is that he's appearing stone-like to her. Mm-hmm. Or maybe it's just her perception.
That's possible.
Her perception is that he's, you know, a stone face. He's glaring. And he's glaring while saying, at least let us try a negotiation. Please. And she's basically saying he's showing all of his emotions on his face, which are, I guess, not very accommodating.
Mm-hmm.
A sudden thump resounded in the vision, and Venli, attuned to anxiety, rushed out onto the balcony. A half-destroyed city stretched below, where a battle had happened, and there's dead heaps. Sorry, and the dead are heaped in piles. That pounding sounded again, and the air was breaking. The clouds and sky seemed to be a mural painted on an enormous dome ceiling. Mm-hmm. And the pounds continued, a web of cracks appearing overhead. Yeah, what do you make of this? Is wild. This seems like a massive dome that's covering over this land.
Yeah.
And there's this outside force attacking it and breaking it.
Right. It is not an actual dome. This is the vision being attacked by Odium. Odium's trying to get into the vision.
Yeah. Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
I thought it was actually the place.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think this is like the penetration of the vision itself.
And where are they again in this vision? This is Noadon as a younger self.
Yeah, in the past, after one of the desolation battles.
But this pillared place, where exactly is this?
It's wherever Noadon's castle was, which we're not really sure where he was came from. Because it was so long ago, right?
Okay. Okay, where are dead heaps and piles? The pounding sounded again. It's a cracking of webs in the sky. Beyond them shone a vivid yellow light. He's here, she whispers.
Yeah, because here...
That's why...
Here it is there. The air was breaking.
Yeah, the air was
breaking. The clouds and sky seemed to be a mural painted on an enormous dome ceiling. So the sky, the actual vision itself is the dome. And that's what's crumbling.
That's right.
It's the actual sky is breaking.
That's right.
Which is awesome.
Yeah, the air was breaking. Yeah. Yeah, I love that line. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
He's here, she whispers. That's why there can't be a negotiation, human. He knows we don't need one. You want peace? Surrender. Give yourselves up and hope that he doesn't care to destroy you. So interesting here in that paragraph that she calls him human and has been. No name.
No.
She's not there yet.
No.
She can't call him Dalinar
or Colin or Blackthorn. Colin.
No, just a human.
Mm-hmm.
So we're not at names yet.
No.
That's where she's at. A faint hope, considering what Rhein had said to her about exterminating the humans. Because she says, give yourselves up and hope that he, that Odium, doesn't care to destroy you. Interesting that the he isn't capitalized here for Odium.
Yeah.
But I guess not. It's only capitalized for the Almighty, right?
I guess. I don't know. That's strange.
A faint hope, considering what Rhein had said. Okay, so with the next pound, the sky fractured in a hole. Appeared overhead, a powerful light shining beyond. The very shards of the air, broken like a mirror, were sucked into that light. That's so cool.
So awesome.
It's wicked. A pulse of power blasted from the hole, shaking the city with a terrible vibration. It tossed Venli to the balcony's floor. Colin reached to help her, but a second pulse caused him to fall as well. The bricks in the room's wall separated from one another and began to float apart, and they entered Diagon Alley, where they shopped all day long. Oh, I'm sorry. Sorry, I was just misreading that. So I think my interpretation
your copy's different.
No, just when the bricks were separating, oh, it's when the bricks opened
like
up.
Okay.
The boards that made up the balcony began to lift, nails floating into the sky. A guard ran to the balcony but stumbled, and his very skin started to separate into water and a dried husk. I like the way that they described the boards and the nails lifting. The first movie I ever saw that to great effect was the trailer, and then I subsequently saw it back in the early 90s for Twister.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer had the boards bouncing and then the nails were coming up.
Yeah.
Showing the terror of, you know, being in a tornado.
You know, there's another one coming out, right?
I know.
Called Twisters. Yeah. So there's going to be another Twister. Like, there's not just going to be one. There'll be two of them.
We're up to two now, folks.
I think it's going to be like a Godzilla versus Mothra type situation where two Twisters go into the ring. One comes out.
Yeah.
Who will be crowned win champion?
Yeah. There can only be one there champion.
It's the Highlander for Twisters. There can only be one.
There can only be one Twister. Okay, so the rooms go. So the rooms separate. It starts floating apart. The boards and nails floating in the sky. Okay, mm-hmm. So that's my Twister reference. A guard ran to the balcony, but stumbled, and his very skin started to separate into water and a dried husk.
Crazy.
Everything just came apart. Brutal.
Yeah.
A wind rose around Venli, pulling debris toward that hole in the sky and the brilliant, terrible light beyond. Boards shredded to splinters. Bricks floated past her head. She growled, the rhythm of resolve thumping inside her as she grabbed and clung to parts of the floor that hadn't yet separated. That burning, she knew it well. The terrible pain of odium's heat scalding her skin, scorching her until her very bones, somehow still able to feel, became ash. It happened every time he gave her orders. What worse thing would he do if he found her fraternizing with the enemy? She attuned determination and crawled away from the light. Escape, she thinks. She reached the chamber beyond the balcony and lurched to her feet, trying to run, but the wind pulled at her, making each step a struggle. I like this wind, or yeah. Character of the wind, you know.
Yep.
She wants to get away, but it's like, hang on, there's more here. Like,
there's more wind.
You've got to experience this. Overhead, the ceiling separated in a single magnificent burst, each brick exploding away from the others and then streaming towards the void. This also, it also has a, I don't know, a feeling of the nothing in
the
never ending story. It's the breakdown of everything, the void,
it's what we
the nothingness.
Would assume a black hole would do to something.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's the nothing is a perfect metaphor, though.
The pieces of the unfortunate guard rose after them, a sack drained of grain, a puppet with no controlling hand. I don't understand the puppet reference there. But, okay. Venli dropped to the ground again and continued crawling. But the stones of the floor separated, floating upward with her on them. I thought that was cool. That's a great image.
The puppet with no controlling hand is like a hand puppet that has no hand in it. It's just a floppy thing that's...
Yeah.
That's what he looks like, right? He just looks like
He looks like something... Yeah, because all the moisture is out of them. They're like a husk.
Yeah,
so,
like a sack of drained grain. It's just like an empty bag.
Right.
An empty human bag.
Yeah. Sorry, I thought it was more an allusion to that that these guards and others that they're describing... that are having the life and moisture sucked right out of them mm-hmm. Were puppets to begin with and weren't in control of their lives.
Yeah, maybe. That's a good way of looking at it too, for sure.
So floating towards... Okay, so she scrambles precariously from one floating piece of stone to another. This is a great image. Mm-hmm. I love this.
Yeah.
This is really great. The rhythm of resolve still attuned, she dared to glance backward. The hole had widened, and the all-consuming light feasted on the streams of refuse. She turned away, desperate to do what she could to delay her own burning. And then she stopped and looked back again. Dalinar Kolan stood on the balcony, and he was glowing. Neshwa Kadal, radiant knight. Without meaning to, she attuned to the rhythm of awe. I love that.
It's amazing.
She didn't mean to. She just couldn't help it. She just tuned to this new... That's amazing.
Yeah.
Around Kolin, the balcony was stable. The boards trembled and quivered at his feet, but did not move into the sky. The balcony railing had ripped apart to either side of him, but where he held to it with a firm grip, it remained secure. He was her enemy, and yet... Long ago, these humans had resisted her gods. Yes, the enslavement of her cousins, the singers, was impossible to ignore. Still, the humans had fought and had won. The listeners remembered this as a song that was sung to the rhythm of awe, Neshwa Kadal.
So that's the name of the actual song, is Neshwa Kadal, right. And it means radiant night.
I really
love this here because she's in awe of it,
uh-huh.
Right? She's like, they did really horrible things to us, but they did help us at one point to get rid of our gods. And one of the interesting parts is that if this was Eshenai instead, Eshenai might not know enough. Because she was the soldier type. Venli's the one who knows all the songs. She's the one who was looking through all the songs for different forms, and so she knows the history of her people more than probably anyone that was living at Narok, right?
Right.
So it's really cool that that Venli's the one who gets to experience this. She's like, oh my god, all the stories flooding in my head. They helped liberate our people. At one point, they helped liberate our people. So he was just an Alethi at first.
Right.
The people who fought against her at the Shattered Plains. Then she was just a mere human, as you pointed out.
Yeah.
And now he's Neshwa Kadal, something of her old stories, someone who helped her before in their past. It's really, really cool how Dalinar is able to be three people in one chapter to her, right?
From her perspective, And also it helps bring her along.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
It transforms him in her mind, right?
Mm-hmm.
The calm, gentle light spread from Dalinar Colan's hand to the railing and then down to the floor. Boards and stones sank down from the air, re-knitting. Venli's current block of stone settled back into place, and all through the city, buildings burst apart and zoomed upward, but the walls of this tower returned to their positions. So cool.
So cool.
Venli immediately made for the steps downward. If whatever Colan was doing stopped, she wanted to be on solid rock. So she wound her way to the ground floor, and then once on the street, she positioned herself near the balcony and Colin's influence. Above, Odium's light went out. Stones and splinters rained down on the city, crashing about her. Dried bodies dropped like discarded clothing. Venli pressed back against the tower wall, attuning anxiety, raising her arm against the dust of the debris. But the hole remained in the sky. Though the light was gone from behind it, below the rubbled remains of the city seemed a sham. There were no cries of fear. There were no moans of pain. Bodies were just husks, skins lying empty on the ground.
Isn't that so gross?
It's so gross. But it's unnerving.
Yeah. And
because
gross.
You would expect after such horror, there'd be a sound to it. There'd be some kind of response. But there's nothing. It's just a hole in the sky.
Yeah.
All this destruction raining down, and then...
And then, quiet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A sudden pounding broke the air behind her, opening another hole. Lower down and near the edge of the city, the sky crumbled into the gap, revealing that hateful light again. So is this Odium attacking another area?
Yeah.
In the distance?
Yeah. Another part of the dome that is the vision.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Remember, the Stormfather was fighting against him, so maybe the Stormfather was able to hold him back for a very brief second, and he had to start over at a different location or something.
It consumed everything near it. Walls, buildings, even the ground disintegrating and flowing into the maw. Dust and debris washed over Venli in a furious wind. I couldn't help but think there for that sentence that... after she sees all of this destruction, the dust and debris washed over Venli in a furious wind. I wondered if it was the wind that was furious or if it was Venli that was starting to become furious at what's happening.
I like the idea of these two words together because Odium, we know, honor is a god of honor, and Odium literally means anger or hate. furious yeah. wind. We have this wind motif through these books, and a furious mm-hmm. wind feels like it might come from him. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like that's kind of the kind of wind that he does. An Everstorm, not a high storm, but an Everstorm is a furious wind. It's really neat.
She pressed against the stone wall, clinging to one of the balcony's supports. Terrible heat washed across her from the distant hole. Clamping her eyes shut, she tightened her grip. He could come claim her, but she would not let go.
Hmm.
That's a change.
That's cool, right?
That's a change.
Yeah. Well, she's kind
of... She would resist
him. She's kind of been there, but not really admitting it or something, you know?
Mm-hmm. And what of the grand purpose? What of the power that he offers? Did she still want those things? Or was that merely something to grasp onto, now that she had brought about the end of her people? She gritted her teeth. So there you go. Now that she had brought about the end of her people.
Yeah, she feels
that
guilty.
That's what Dalinar's showing her.
Mm-hmm.
That's ultimately what is shown to her. Is the end of her people. Like, where does this go?
Right. Or that it doesn't have to necessarily be the end. You don't have to just take the pain and the burning and the obliteration that Odium is about to do to us. We can actually fight against, even if
right.
it is small, right? We can
right.
try to hold things together. Bondsmith.
I think that it's... Now... Am I getting this right or wrong here? In this vision, are her people being affected by this in the vision, or are these just, you know, Noadon's
it's
kingdom
just the, yeah,
and others?
Remember that just the two of them are real people. Everything else is just a vision, part of the vision, right?
Right. She gritted her teeth. In the distance, she heard a quiet rhythm. Somehow it sounded over the roar of the wind and the clacking of dust and stones. The rhythm of anxiety? She asks, she opens her eyes, and she saw Timber fighting against the wind in an attempt to reach her. Bursts of light exploded from the little spren in frantic rings. Buildings crumbled along the street. The entire city was collapsing away. Even the palace broke apart, all save this one patch near the balcony. The little spren changed to the rhythm of the lost and began to slide backward. Venli shouted and released the pillar. She immediately was pushed by the wind, but although she wasn't in storm form any longer, this was a form of power. It was incredibly nimble. She controlled her fall, going down on her side and skidding on the stones, feet toward the oppressive light. As she neared the little spren, Venli jammed her foot into a cleft in the street and then grabbed a crack in the broken stone, pulling herself to a halt. With her other hand, she twisted and snatched Timber from the air. Touching Timber felt like touching silk, being blown by a wind. As Venli folded her left hand around the spren, she felt a pulsing warmth. Timber pulsed to praise as Venli pulled her close to her breast.
Isn't that really fucking cool? That Timber
yeah.
also can like pulse to the rhythms?
Yeah.
Isn't that
right.
so awesome? Remember mm-hmm. the theory that I read to you is that that Timber is potentially that captain's daughter. Remember the captain that
right
the sea captain in Shadesmar? That
mm-hmm.
this could potentially be her daughter, so or his daughter.
His daughter.
Yeah, that's
right.
That's one of the theories that are out there.
Great, Venli thought, lowering her head against the wind, her face against the ground, holding on to the cleft of the rock with her right hand. Now we can fall together. I think that might be my highlight.
Yeah.
Now we can fall together.
No matter what happens.
No matter what happens.
She wants Timber there.
Right.
Isn't that awesome?
It's awesome. I think that's my highlight.
I might have had something else, but I'm changing it to this because it is really, really awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Now we can fall together. Like, come on. She had one hope to hold on and hope that eventually the heat faded. The wind stilled. Debris came clattering back to the ground, though the fall was less clamorous this time. Not only had the wind been pulling sideways rather than up, there simply wasn't much debris left. Venli rose, covered in dust, her face and hands cut by chips of stone. timber pulsed softly in her hand. Mm-hmm. The city was basically gone. No more than the occasional outline of a building foundation and the remains of the strange rock formations known as the Windblades. So they've got solar panels somewhere.
Pretty much, yeah.
Even those had been weathered down to knobs 5 or 6 feet tall. The only structure in the city that remained was a quarter of the tower where Colin had been standing. Behind her was a thick, gaping hole into nothingness.
Is that what that said?
What's that?
Read the line again.
Behind her was a black, gaping hole into nothingness.
Okay, sorry. That's what I have. Okay. That's not what you read, though, the first time, I don't think.
Oh, what did I read?
I don't know. I think you said something about a thick hole or something.
Oh, I don't know.
I think you said, you threw the word thick in there, and I'm like, wait a minute. Thick's not in there.
I don't know. The ground trembled. Oh, no. Mm-hmm. Something beat against the stones underneath of her. The very ground began to shake and crumble. Venli ran toward the broken palace right as everything at last fell apart. The ground, the remaining foundations, even the air seemed to disintegrate. A chasm opened beneath her, and Venli leaped, trying to reach the other side. She came up a few feet short and plummeted into the hole. Falling, she twisted in the air, reaching for the collapsing sky with one hand and clutching timber in the other. And above, the man in the blue uniform leaped into the chasm. He fell beside the hole's perimeter and stretched one hand toward Venli, his other ground against the rock wall, hand scraping the stone. Something flashed around his arm, lines of light, a framework that covered his body. His fingers didn't bleed as they scraped the stone. Around her, the rocks, the air itself, became more substantial. In defiance of the heat below, Venli slowed just enough that her fingers met those of Colin. Go. She crashed to the floor of her cave back in Murat. The vision was gone. Sweating, panting, she opened her left fist, and to her relief, timber floated out, pulsing with a hesitant rhythm.
So he, like, last desperate thing, goes, catches her hand, and then releases her from the vision.
Right.
I'm guessing that if she falls into this hole, then Odium will know she was there. That's what's at stake, right?
Maybe.
Yeah. And by Colin catching her and sending her out of the vision before Odium can burn the rest of the vision up, he might not know that she's there. Because Dalinar is going to get burned up in pure pain over here. Because he's left behind, right?
Right.
So it's interesting to think that that's really what he saved her from was...
Being found.
Being found, yeah.
Yeah.
Really,
yeah.
Really cool.
You're right. Well, we get our final POV here from this chapter, and we're back to Dalinar. As you said, he's still there. Dalinar dissolved into pure pain, felt himself being ripped apart, flayed, and shredded. Each piece of him removed and allowed to hurt in isolation, a punishment, a retribution, a personalized torment. It could have persisted for an eternity, but instead, blessedly, the agony faded and he came to himself. He knelt on an endless plain of glowing white stone. Light coalesced beside him, forming into a figure dressed in gold and white, holding a short scepter. "What were you seeing?" Odium asked, curious. He tapped his scepter on the ground like a cane. Noadon's palace, where Dalinar had been moments before, materialized out of light beside them. Ah, this one again. Looking for answers from the dead. Dalinar squeezed his eyes shut. What a fool he'd been. If there had ever been a hope of peace, he'd probably destroyed it by pulling that Parshendi woman into a vision and subjecting her to Odium's horrors.
See,
Dalinar.
Odium Dalinar. Asks, what were you seeing? He doesn't know what was going on in the vision.
Right.
So he doesn't know that Venli was here, which is really, really awesome.
Dalinar, Dalinar, Odium says. He settles down on a seat formed from light and then rested one hand on Dalinar's shoulder. It hurts, doesn't it? Yes, I know pain. I am the only god who does. The only one who cares. Can there be peace? Dalinar asks, his voice ragged. Speaking was hard. He'd felt himself being ripped apart in the light moments before. Yes, Dalinar, Odium says. There can be, and there will be. After you destroy Roshar? No. After you destroy it, Dalinar. I am the one who will rebuild it. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Because Dalinar is destined to be his champion, isn't it? That's what we're facing here, right?
That's been your theory for a very long time, since this book really started. Since Dalinar first had that vision of the Nine Shadows, you said to me that you thought the eyes of the champion looked familiar to Dalinar because they were his own eyes, is what you said to me. All those, almost over a year ago, when we started covering this book, that's what you said to me.
Yeah. Well, it could be that. Let's hope that it isn't. After you destroy it, Dalinar. And he's going to rebuild it.
Mm-hmm.
But into what?
A banana.
A big banana.
A big floating banana.
Agree to a contest between the champions, then, Dalinar forces out. Let us find a way to... He trailed off. How could he fight this thing? Odium patted Dalinar's shoulder. Be strong, Dalinar. I have faith in you, even when you don't have it in yourself. Though it will hurt for a time, there is an end. Peace is in your future. Push through the agony. Then you will be victorious, my son. My son, he says.
Oh.
Ooh.
Oh, he's got daddy issues.
The vision faded, and Dalinar found himself back in the upper room of Urithiru. He collapsed into the seat he'd placed there, Navani taking his arm, concerned. Though through his bond, Dalinar sensed weeping. The Stormfather had kept Odium back, but storms, he had paid a price. The most powerful spren on Roshar, the embodiment of the tempest that shaped all of life, was crying like a child, whispering that Odium was too strong.
Isn't that crazy?
It's crazy. That's our chapter.
That is the chapter.
That's a doozy.
Mm-hmm.
But him calling him my son, it's like he... What? Odium is the creator? Like, he calls him his son.
Kind of, eh?
It's like, I think, references that Odium believes that he's a creator. You're my son. You're mm-hmm. my family.
Yeah. It's also how Dalinar talks to younger soldiers.
Yeah. That's
son.
Ooh. Right.
You know what I mean? It's how he treats those around him that are, you know, not his actual sons. He calls Kaladin his son, right? Don't worry about it, son. So
maybe that's the reference there, is that because Dalinar uses that language.
Yeah, he's imitating his own. Yeah.
Right. And so like Dalinar refers to others in his command
mm-hmm.
as son. So Odium calls him son because Odium will command Dalinar.
Right, because he's the admiral, Admiral Odium, and you're just a general or whatever. Yeah, yeah, it's really cool, eh?
Well, I'm more nervous now than ever about this Dalinar thing, but okay. It's really cool. I thought bringing Venli into the dream was amazing.
It's awesome, right?
Into the vision, yeah.
Being able to see Dalinar do stuff through someone else's mm-hmm. eyes... Like that's always been one of the things that Sanderson has excelled at, is showing us these awesome moments through other characters' eyes and feeling their awe And that becomes our awe as well, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really cool.
I will say this, though. I mean, it is rich for Dalinar to ask for peace and cooperation even from Venli.
Mm-hmm. It is.
It's a lot to ask. Like, if Venli just went, no.
Yeah.
It would make perfect sense.
Ish, don't think so, yeah. No. I love the way that it mirrors that meeting with Tanalan, the younger Tanalan at Rathalas, and how he's begging for peace, right?
Right, right.
It's the same kind of way that he tried to appease Evie and begged for peace, and he's like, we can do whatever it is, we can make it happen. And then Tanalan took advantage of that, right? And like sent him on a mission to be killed. So yeah, it's really cool. I've always said this. I like how these characters end up kind of in the same place, but in a different way again, you know, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So, your highlight is, Fall Together.
Yeah. We fall together.
Yeah. I love that too. Yeah, I think it's awesome.
It's just, I don't know.
What I had written down here before I changed it is literally just the image of Dalinar holding that portion of the tower together.
Of course.
And like, it's amazing. Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. It can go unsaid how amazing, like, you know what I mean? But this fall together thing, Venli realizing just how much Timber means to her is a very beautiful moment.
And I think it means the most to her. So what that indicates to me is your journey, your connection with Esprin, you're headed towards becoming a Night Reader.
Nishwa Kadal.
Yeah.
So she's saying, it's fucking awesome because she's saying Nishwa Kadal about Dalinar, but we're about seeing Dalinar. Her becoming a Nishwa Kadal.
It's about her. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Podcasting is cool, dude.
It's cool. It is.
It really is.
It's starting to become cool.
We're getting there.
We're getting there.
Let's do the next one.
Okay. Okay, chapter 110. We are getting to a million stars.
Yeah.
Because they counted.
They did. They were like,
and 9,000. That's how many there are.
And 1,000,000.
The Midnight Mother created monsters of shadow and oil. Dark imitations of creatures she saw or consumed. Their description matches no Spren I can find in modern literature, according to Hesse's Mythica.
Right.
Are these shadow creatures the one that we came across in the vision, one of the first visions?
Yes. Yes, those midnight creatures that Dalinar fought. We came upon this at the beginning of this book. And the realization that they were because Dalinar thought, it must be related when he saw the report that Shallan had written or whatever. So yes, of course.
So we begin with Captain Notam here giving the command. And two of the sailors unlatched a section of the hull, exposing the crashing waves of beads just beyond.
Mm-hmm.
Shallan put her free hand on the frame and opened the cargo door. And leaned out over the churning depths. Adolin tried to tug her back, but she remained in place. She'd chosen to wear Vale's outfit today. In part for the pockets, she carried three larger gemstones with her. Kaladin carried four. Their bromes had all run out of stormlight. Even these larger unset gems were getting close to failing. Hopefully they would last long enough to get them to Thalen City and the Oathgate. I like this urgency of their resources are dwindling.
Yep. Yeah, it's definitely like a survival horror here in Shadesmar, right? Very little food. The bad guys are on us. We don't have very many resources.
No. I can't believe they jumped in. Like crazy.
Were you thinking what the fuck are they going to do?
What are they doing? Yeah, I thought, what are you doing? And then when she uses her,
isn't it so fucking cool?
It's really cool. It's really cool.
Yeah, let's get to it. It's so awesome.
Okay. Hopefully, they would last long enough. Okay. Beyond the waves, so close that the sailors feared hidden rocks beneath the beads, a dark landscape interrupted the horizon. The inverse of Longbrow's Straits.
a place where trees grew tall and forming a black jungle of glass plants.
Mm-hmm.
Such a cool image. I love it.
It is cool.
A sailor clomped down the steps into the hold and barked something at Captain Notam. "Your enemies are close now," the captain translated.
Mm-hmm.
Honor's Path had made a heroic effort these last few hours, pushing its Mandras to exhaustion. And if they hadn't been nearly, sorry, and it hadn't been nearly enough, the Fused were slower than Kaladin, but they're far faster than the ship.
Mm-hmm.
So they're almost on them, right?
Yeah.
Shallan looked at the captain. His bearded face, which glowed with a soft phantom light, betrayed nothing of what must have been a powerful conflict for him. Turn over the captives to the enemy, and perhaps save his crew? Or set them free, and hope that the ancient daughter could escape? A door at the back of the hold opened, and Kaladin led Syl from her cabin. The captain had only now given permission to release her, as if wishing to delay the decision until the last possible moment. Syl's color seemed muted, and she clung to Kaladin's arm, unsteady. Was she going to be able to make it to shore with them? She's a Spren. She doesn't need air. She'll be fine. Hopefully. "Go then," the captain says, "and be swift. I cannot promise that my crew, once captured, will be able to keep this secret for long."
Mm-hmm.
Apparently it was difficult to kill Spren, but hurting them was quite easy.
Yeah.
Another sailor released Adolin's sword, Spren, from her cabin. She didn't look as weathered as Syl. One place seemed as good as another to her. Kaladin led Syl over. "Ancient daughter," the captain said, bowing his head. "Won't meet my eyes, Notam?" Syl asks. "I suppose locking me away here isn't too different from all those days you spent running about at father's whims back home."
So they like know each other like personally a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, who's the father she's referencing here?
Stormfather.
This is Stormfather, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or Honor, but Captain Notam wouldn't have known Honor. Because okay. He would have been created after, because she's the only one that's from that time period, right?
Right. That's right. He didn't reply to her, but instead turned away. With Syl and the Deadeye joining them, that only left one person, Azure, who was lounging by the steps, wearing her breastplate and cloak. Her arms were folded. "Are you sure you won't change your mind?" Shallan asks. Azure shook her head. "Azure," Kaladin says, "I was too harsh earlier." "That doesn't mean that I..." "It's not that," she says. "I simply have a different thread to chase. And besides, I left my men to fight those monsters in Kolinar. Doesn't feel right to do the same again." She smiled. "Don't fear for me, Stormblessed. You will have a much better chance if I stay here, as will these sailors. When you boys next meet the swordsman who taught you that morning, Kata, warn him that I'm looking for him."
Mm-hmm.
"Zale?" Adolin asked. "You know Zale?" So there's our
confirmation.
Suspicion confirmed.
Yeah.
"We're old friends," she said. "Notam, have your sailors been cutting those bales of cloth into the shapes that I requested?" "Yes," the captain said, "but I don't understand." "Well, you soon will." She gave Kaladin a lazy salute. No, so that's something with these bales of cloth.
Yeah.
Is that something that's going to come up in another book series or something?
It's something that you only understand if you've read the other book.
Right.
Right. And I can't really tell you what it is that she has planned for it, but this is like the super long game where you're going to have to wait until we read Warbreaker, and then you'll know what that means.
Is Warbreaker the novella?
No, it's just a standalone book unrelated to Stormlight other than some of these characters being in it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. That's neat. Okay. The ship crashed through a large wave of beads, sending... Hang on, am I in the right place here? We're old friends. Yeah, you soon will. Okay. The ship crashed through a large wave of beads, sending some through the open cargo deck doors. Sailors with brooms started brushing them back toward the opening. Are you going? The captain said to Shallan. Every moment you delay increases the danger to us all. He still wouldn't look at Syl. Yeah, what do you think? Is it just shame that he feels?
I think so, yeah.
Hmm. Something about that I don't quite understand. Right, Shallan thought. Well, someone had to start the party. So she took Adolin by one hand and Pattern by the other. Kaladin linked hands with Pattern and Syl, and Adolin grabbed his spren. They crowded into the opening, into the cargo hold, looking at the glass beads below. Churning, catching the light of a distant sun, sparkling like a million stars.
So I love this idea that the sea of beads mm-hmm. is the million stars that they're seeing.
Right.
Because the light is reflecting off these beads. It's really,
right.
It's like an inverted world. So the idea of the stars are inverted as well.
Yeah, they're staring at it in this ocean mm-hmm. of beads. Yeah.
As for Captain Nodum, I think that he's feeling guilt for two things. He's feeling guilt for imprisoning her and for letting her go. Because he's going against his duty by letting her go. And he's
right.
putting her in, by putting her locked up, he's going against probably what he thinks he should do. So he's feeling those two things at once, which is why it's making it hard for him to even look at her. And her color is muted, so there's literally a visual effect of what he's done to her on her. It would be like having, you know, ordered someone beaten and then having to look at their scars and their bruises and stuff, right?
Like, yeah, maybe, eh?
Mm-hmm.
Well, he's denied her access to the High Storm, isn't it?
Yeah, and just like, and being
proximity
away from Cal and all that stuff, right?
Right. Shallan threw herself off the ship, joined by the others. She crashed into the beads, which swallowed her. They seemed to slip too easily into them, like before, when she'd fallen into the ocean. It felt like something was pulling her down. And she sank into the beads, which rolled against her skin, overwhelming her senses with thoughts of trees and rocks. She fought the sensation, struggling to keep herself from thrashing too much. And she clung to Adolin. But Pattern's hand was pulled from her grip. I can't do this. I can't let them claim me. I can't. What's that exclamation about?
Like,
I can't let them claim me.
Yeah, like the beads are like swallowing her up.
Oh, okay. They hit the bottom, which was shallow. Here, near the shore, then Shallan finally let herself draw in the stormlight. It sustained her and calmed her. She fished in her pocket for the bead she'd picked from the bucket earlier. When she fed the bead stormlight, the other beads around her trembled and then pulled back, forming the walls and ceiling of a small room.
Fucking cool, man.
This is so great.
Yeah.
You know how in D&D you can find those pockets, those dimensions of security?
Yeah. Like a Lehman's tiny hut or whatever.
Lehman's tiny. Yeah, exactly. That's
yeah,
what
dude.
It reminded me of.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Mm-hmm. The stormlight curling from her skin illuminated the space with a faint glow. Adolin let go of her hand and fell to his knees, coughing and gasping. His dead eye just stood there as always. Damnation, Adolin says, wheezing, drowning with no water. It shouldn't be so hard, should it? All we had to do was hold our breath. Shallan stepped to the side of the room, listening. Yes, it was almost like she could hear the beads whispering to her beneath their clattering. She plunged her hand through the wall, and her fingers brushed cloth, and she grabbed a hold. And a moment later, Kaladin seized her arm and pulled himself into the room, made from beads, stumbling and falling to his knees. He wasn't glowing. You didn't use a gemstone? Shallan asks. Almost had to, he says. He took a few deep breaths and then stood up. But we need to conserve those. He turned around. Syl? Okay, I want to say here, how awesome is that Kaladin didn't use one?
Yeah.
I think that's great. He just is like, no, we have to conserve this.
Right.
I'm going to wait till it's absolutely necessary. And it turned out, you know, Syl
Perfect.
Helped him out. And,
yep, exactly, yeah. Yep.
A disturbance on the other side of the chamber announced someone approaching. Whoever it was wasn't able to get in until Shallan walked over and broke the surface of the bead wall with her hand. Pattern entered and looked around the room, humming happily. Hmm, a nice pattern, Shallan. Sill, Captain repeated. Or sorry, Captain. Captain Kaladin repeated. We jumped hand in hand, but she let go. Where? Oh, she'll be fine, Shallan says. Hmm. Pattern agrees. Spren need no air, he confirms. Right. Kaladin took a deep breath and then nodded. He started pacing anyway, so Shallan settled down on the ground to wait, pack in her lap. They each carried a change of clothing and 3 water jugs, some of the food that Adolin had purchased. Hopefully it would be enough to reach Thalen City. Then they'd have to make the Oathgate work. They waited as long as they dared, hoping the Fused had passed them by, chasing the ship. Finally,
this is the best part of it. It's not just this is a way for them to be able to survive at the bottom of the Sea of Beads. It's a perfect place to hide.
Right.
It's brilliant,
it's,
man.
It's also a bit like hiding from the Nazgul.
A little bit, yeah. A little bit. Yeah. Yeah. It's a very fucked up bead-oriented Nazgul. oh my God, did you just choke on your coffee?
Yeah, you almost had me there, bro. What'd you say? A Nazgul beaded?
It's, like, it's almost like a really fucked up bead-oriented Nazgul scene.
Bead or a Nazgul necklace, a bead.
It's a, hold on. I almost said an anal bead joke with concerning the Nazguls. Oh, oh. We got to move on. This is it's too much.
Yeah. It'll be, it's going down. Okay. we need to conserve. Hang on. Where you've thrown me for a loop here with your beads.
Apologies.
You didn't use a gemstone? Yeah, no, she'll be fine. Okay. Kaladin took a deep breath, then nodded. He stared, started pacing. I like that he started pacing.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's worried about her. Yeah. I love that.
He just got reunited with her, and now she's gone again.
I know. I love Kaladin's connection to Syl.
Me too.
I just love it.
Yeah.
I love what they have. I don't know what it's all about, but I love what they have. They each carried a change of clothing. 3 jugs, they did that. Then she'd have to make the Oathgate work. Yeah, see, I find that too is always a reminder to Shallan, like her big stress.
Right.
Her rhythm of anxiety is, how can I make it work? I have no idea what I'm doing.
Right.
Right. Shallan stood up and pointed that way. Are you sure? Kaladin asks. Yes, even the slope agrees. She kicked at the obsidian ground, which ran at a gentle incline. Right, Adolin says. Lock hands. They did so, and, heart fluttering, Shallan recovered the stormlight from her shell of a room. Beads came crashing down, enveloping her. They started up the slope, against the tide of beads. It was more difficult than she'd imagined. The current of the shifting beads seemed determined to hold them back, but still, she had stormlight to sustain her.
Mm-hmm.
And they soon reached a place where the ground was too steep to walk on easily. Shallan let go of the men's hands and scrambled up the incline. A moment after, her head broke the surface, and Syl appeared on the bank, reaching down and helping Shallan up the last few feet. Beads rolled off her clothing, clattering against the ground as the others pulled themselves onto the shore. I saw the enemy fly past, Syl said. I was hiding by the trees here. At her urging, they entered the forest of glass plants before settling down to recover from their escape. Shallan immediately felt herself itching for her sketchpad. These trees, the trunks were translucent, and the leaves looked like they were blown from glass in a multitude of colors. Even the moss was like melted green glass, strands hanging down in silky lines. When she touched them, they broke off. I love this. I think this is my highlight.
Is
the glass plants.
Flora or whatever?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I think it might be my highlight of this chapter.
That's cool.
Overhead, the clouds rippled and the mother of pearl iridescence that marked another high storm in the real world. Yeah. Shallan could barely see it through the canopy, but the effect on Pattern and Syl was immediate. They stood up straighter and Syl's wan color brightened to a healthy blue-white. Even Pattern's head shifted more quickly, spinning through a dozen different cycles in a matter of minutes. Stormlight still trailed from Shallan's skin. She'd taken in a rather large amount of it, but hadn't lost too much. She'd returned it to the gemstone, a process she didn't quite understand, but which felt natural at the same time. Nearby, Syl looked to the southwest with a kind of wistful, far-off expression. "Syl," Shallan asks. "There is a storm that way, too," she whispered. Then shook herself and seemed embarrassed. Kaladin dug out two gemstones. "All right," he says. "We fly." They decided to use two gemstones worth of stormlight to fly inward. A gamble to get a head start on their hike.
I love this idea.
And to get away from the coast. Yeah, for them to just go to the air.
Yeah, they're just going to go gone and fly as far as they can on a very little amount of stormlight they have. They've portioned out, we're going to use this amount of stormlight for a flight. We might only be able to fly for 10 minutes, but that in that 10 minutes, we're going to be able to cover a huge amount of ground.
Right.
Yeah.
Hopefully the Fused wouldn't treat the Honor Spren too harshly. Shallan worried for them, but equally for what would happen if the Fused doubled back to search for a group. A short flight now should deposit them far enough inland that they'd be tough to locate. Once they landed, they would hike across several days worth of Shadesmar landscape before reaching the island of Thelenna, which would manifest as a lake here. Thelen City and its Oathgate were on the very rim of that lake. Kaladin lashed them one at a time, and fortunately, his arts worked on the Spren as they did humans. They took to the air and started the last leg of their journey.
So cool, eh? They just all hover there and just take off. It's so awesome.
It's a great little chapter, but glass plants, I think, for me.
Cool. That's an awesome highlight.
What about you?
Mine is the little Zael bit.
Yeah.
You know Zael?
You know Zael?
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, we kind of anticipated that one. I wonder though, she's seeking him. It seems like she was hunting him, like as a bounty hunter would.
Yep. But so she said that her bounty is the weapon.
Right.
That's what she's really after, is the weapon.
I know this is weird, but there's no chance that weapon's Oathbringer.
No, we already know what it is. She described it as a weapon that bleeds smoke.
Bleeds smoke, right, yeah, billowy.
We know that that's the sword that Zeth has, Sword Nimi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right, sorry. Forgot we'd already figured that one out.
Some sword confusion going on.
Some sword confusion. Is it time?
Time for the info dump?
An info dump.
We want to say thank you very much to Buzzkill Joe, not for just doing the info dump, but just really for helping us be organized. You know, he and I had a back and forth today about deciding what kind of live reads we're going to do in part five, and he's going to look into some stuff. And so, yeah, it's really good to have him around. It's makes our jobs easier, and primarily we love the info dumpery that he provides. So thank you again to Buzzkill Joe for all the hard work. Chapter 109, Neshwa Kadal. He has a person here called Creer, a duty sergeant from Bridge 20, wears glasses but has a twin who does not wear glasses. Very interesting, just new little character here. I don't know if this is true for this character, but I know that a lot of times Sanderson will create these characters and give them a slight description because he is putting someone from the real world into his story. And so he might know someone named like John Creer, and John Creer is someone he knows. And now Creer is a character in the story kind of thing. I know he's
not
done that
not
past,
John Creer, though.
No, it's not. Pink. Unfortunately, not. No.
Oh, OK.
No. Karm is another character that's reappeared in these visions before. Dalinar took Karm's spot the first time we saw this vision, so very interesting. This tower strata, we kind of talked about it a little bit. The records below speak of this tower as a living thing with a heart of emerald and ruby and now these veins of garnet. And Dalinar ran his fingers along the lines of red crystal embedded in the stone wall. We kind of talked about how and we know that garnet is for blood. So there's this thing where you can kind of assume that maybe this is the life, the pathways to making Irithiru work someday. That has to do with these veins of garnet. It's pretty neat, right?
It's very neat. I can't help but wonder if it's like, you know, the remnants of another organism or something.
Right. Like this is, Urthiru is going to become like a Godzilla.
Or just a big, like, Constructicon or something.
Yes, please. I would love that. That'd be awesome. Essential theology. We kind of talked about this before. Emeralds make grain. Heliodor's flesh. Diamonds, quartz. Topaz stone and garnet's blood. Or any liquid soluble in water.
These are
the soul casting properties of gemstones. A more complete list can be found at the back of the book. We don't really let you read the back of the book.
No.
You probably can after this book if you really want. We don't really cover
this book. I could.
Yeah, we don't really cover it in the show, though. So we don't make it part of the.
We haven't covered a lot of the extended bits of information.
Once you're caught up, then we're going to definitely do a series of
a deep dive.
Yeah,
on
once
that?
We okay. like run out of Stormlight coverage, because we're going to be waiting for the next book, we're going to do a bunch of series. We're going to do a series of like info dumps where Buzzkill is going to like help us with that, and we're going to go through and maybe think about the things that we've missed, some fan theories and all that stuff, right? Yeah, it'll be fun.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I love this Neshwa Kadal, Radiant Knight, said by the Parshendi when storm-infused Kaladin attacked at the tower in A Way of Kings. So when he jumped across, here's the group. A group of archers on both plateaus froze in stunned postures. The ones in front began to call on to one another in a language Kaladin didn't understand. Neshwa Kadal.
Right.
So this is a words that we've had before, and it's just really cool that he uses it again in this really, really awesome chapter. And I really love how we talked about that. Yes, Dalinar is Neshwa Kadal, but we're really talking about her and her connection to the Spren, right? And her connection to Timber. It's really, really awesome. So here's he has a theory here that he said he read a post. I love that this is included.
What?
So Buzzkill read a post at some point suggesting that Karm, the advisor to Nohadan, was Hoid thousands of years ago. Was Wit. That Wit existed.
Karm.
Yeah, that this character Karm that everyone keeps playing. So Dalinar took Karm's spot. Now Venli takes Karm's spot. That Karm, there's a theory out there that Karm is actually another name for Hoid, another name for Wit. That Wit was this advisor to the king all those thousands and thousands of years ago.
Wow.
Interesting
That's
theory.
Cool.
Yeah, it's a very interesting theory, yeah.
Is that must be based on more information.
Yeah. I don't know. He said that the only notes he has in is, I read a post a while ago suggesting it. So I figured it's safe to say, because there's no real evidence for it. Chapter 110, A Million Stars. Not a lot going on here in this chapter, but Spren torture is mentioned. I cannot promise that my crew, once captured, will be able to keep this secret for long. Apparently it was difficult to kill Spren, but hurting them was quite easy. So, Zael's mentioned. Zael's an old friend of Azure. When you boys next meet, the swordsman who taught you that morning kata, warn him I'm looking for him. And then, we have already just mentioned this in 108, the bounty is a weapon and the one who brought it to your land. So she's looking for both, the shard blade that bleeds black smoke and the person who brought it to this land, which sounds like Zael.
Mm-hmm.
Drowning in a sea of spheres. When humans are in a sea of sphere, they feel like they're drowning. The beads seem determined to hold them back. Drowning with no water. It shouldn't be so hard, should it? All we had to do was hold our breath. Glass forest. This is the part you liked. The trunks. Are these plants? He asks. The trunks were translucent leaves that looked like they were blown from glass, and multitude of colors. Very, very cool. And then Shallan does this thing here where I don't know if we've really seen her do it before, but she returns Stormlight to the gemstone. We've seen her soak up Stormlight, use it in an illusion, and then reclaim that Stormlight into her. But I don't think we've seen her return it into a gemstone before.
No.
It's a process that Shallan didn't quite seem to understand, but it really felt natural to do. I think that's really, really cool. Like, how awesome of a resource is that? You lose Stormlight every time you do that, but man, it's really cool. Like, for, you know, for gamers like us, for D&D players, like, this is just like, you know, such a mechanic. I hope this is something that's in the RPG, being able to, like, can I use your resource management like that? It's so neat. Lashings on Spren. The fact that Kaladin was able to lash the Spren one at a time to be able to fly is really, really cool. It's not something that we've been able to see before, because our Spren have always been these, you know, concepts on the other side in the physical world, right? They've been able to do kind of just attach themselves to our people. Now he has to actually lash them up, which is really awesome. Last bit here. There is, he mentions the little bit that we talked about, which I don't feel like we should talk to you about yet, which is the bales of cloth that Azure wanted to use in some kind of defense strategy against the Fuse. So we don't really know what she does or how she's able to do it, but that'll be for another time, maybe for another year. We'll see.
Another year. Yeah. Oh, gee, great.
Yeah. We'll see how that goes. So thank you so much to Buzzkill Joe for all the hard work on the info dump. We really appreciate you. So everyone, literally tomorrow, Jack and I are going to be recording a live read. Unfortunately, if you're hearing this, the tomorrow will already have happened, so you won't be able to sign up for the Patreon in time to be able to be at tomorrow's live read. But Buzzkill Joe and I have talked, and we think there might be two, potentially three live reads coming up in part five. So if you're interested in being part of that, go to patreon.com/heroesof so that you can sit in the stage audience with us and listen to Jack freak the fuck out. We really appreciate all the patrons who are already with us, and at some point we will get back into reading the entire list. Today is not that day. But we love you all the same. If you want to reach out to us, you can do so at heroesofcathra@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Instagram at the Storm Pod, or try to find us at the subreddit The Storm Pod and the Facebook page The Storm Pod. So really appreciate you guys reaching out and telling us all your stuff and sharing your lives with us. We really love it. So that's really cool. Anyways, man. So tomorrow live read at 9 a.m. Maybe we should be on a few minutes early to work out the mechanical kinks. But are you excited? Are you nervous?
I'm very nervous. Yeah. I'm very nervous.
Yeah, that's cool.
Is it just one chapter?
We're doing the live read tomorrow.
Right, but are we reading a chapter or just a portion?
I don't want to answer that question.
Wow. Okay.
We'll see.
Okay.
We'll see how you handle this stuff.
Oh my god! You're saying it might be so bad that I can't continue.
Well, I remember one of the last times you told me, like, halfway through the live read you couldn't continue and you needed a couple moments. Remember? Do you remember that?
Oh yeah.
So we'll see how it goes.
Like I said, if we're headed for where I, you know, if any of that stuff that I mentioned at the beginning of the pod, if that's where we're headed, wow. Like, I don't know, man.
I think that you're going to be fine, and I think that it's going to be an awesome episode to listen to. So, thank you, everyone, for listening. I'm not going to say what we're covering tomorrow, so you're just going to have to be in the dark because we're trying to keep Jack in the dark as well.
Mm-hmm.
We love you very much. Until next time.
Take care, everybody.
The Storm Pod is brought to you by Heroes of. Music and theme song by Jack Forrest Productions. Additional music by Jason Moray. Produced by our wonderful Patreon team and the Heroes of Akathra.